That was a special request, so thank you. It's an old, one of those old spirituals, choral spirituals. I sang it when I was in high school, and the text lines up perfectly with the text for today, and I think they scoured every music library in the Chicago Public School System to find it, but my gratitude for that. Also, I should tell you that the sermon title printed in your bulletin is incorrect. Sometimes on Wednesday when the sermon title is due, you have one sermon title, and by the time you get to Sunday morning, you have a different title. A better title would be something like Crossing the Chasms. Please join me in prayer. Yes, Crossing the Chasms, because this is a parable about distance, about how far things are away from each other, or how close they are. There was a rich man who was dressed in purple and fine linen, who feasted sumptuously every day, and at his gate lay a poor man named Lazarus, covered with sores, who longed to satisfy his hunger with what fell from the rich man's table. And even the dogs would come and lick his sores, it says. Where I grew up in Michigan, in Ann Arbor, there were not many beggars. There were poor people, but the Ann Arbor powers that be made sure that they weren't out and about where they could be seen. There was one exception, a guy named Shaky Jake. Any of you who know Ann Arbor from a certain era will remember Shaky Jake. He was an old blues musician, he said, and he walked around and he carried this guitar that had about one string on it, and he would jangle it and open up his case and ask people to put in donations. And whether exactly he was a busker or a beggar, it's hard to say, but he was well-loved in Ann Arbor. Actually, he just died a few years ago, and it made the front page of the local news. Well-loved, and I think well-supported, and he had a bit of a cottage industry. There were bumper stickers on the backs of cars that said, "I break for Jake." But because he was so integrated and so cute and so safe, we didn't get much of a sense when I was growing up of what real poverty, real beggars looked like. It has to do with my family, I'm sure. It has to do with where I grew up and how I grew up. When I moved to Chicago 25 years ago, of course, things are different, and times were even harder then when I moved here. All kinds of people asking me for money. And I wish I had had the wisdom of these children this morning who, you know, when Pastor Catherine asked, "Well, how does that make you feel?" It makes me feel sad. It makes me wish I could help. I generally used to, and often do even today, get scared, get blindery. You know, how do I make sure that I don't walk too close within the gravity pull of that person so I have to respond? I try to avoid. There are all kinds of people, right? There's the guy on the red line who's blind, who walks up and down the cars, shaking his cup. There's a guy who used to, in Hyde Park, break down right at the corner of 57th Street and Lakeshore Drive about twice a month. And he had his kid in the car with him. And he would be there right in the middle of everything and asking for gas money. But it happened with such regularity, it felt like something more was going on. And you felt terrible for this child who was in the car with him. And you wanted to, it brought forth such compassion, but you also felt so manipulated. I mean, again, there was part of me that just wanted to not deal, to push away, to not engage. Or if you've been down in the loop lately, up and down Michigan Avenue, there's a woman who sits with a sign on cardboard that begins, "Salam Aleikum, I'm a Muslim woman, and I have several children at home." And she sits in a position of prayer, makes no eye contact, and just lets her sign do the talking for her. I don't know if she gets more money that way or less money, but you see the cynicism that's part of the question I'm already always asking is to what degree is this true and to what degree is it street theater? When of course, at some very basic level, of course it's true, because who would be out begging if there were other options? The last church I worked for, there was a man who sat right outside the door to the office every day. And I would go out and I would say hi to him, and we sort of became friends, and he explained to me, well, we became acquaintances. And he explained to me that one of the reasons he liked sitting there outside the door of the church is he knew that the church had a security camera. And so he was in the view of a security camera, so that gave him some safety when he was out on the street. And we talked, and I expressed to him a number of times how I felt like, in a way, he was part of the church, in that he kept protection of it. He kept people from doing too much mischief on the church grounds. He would ask them to move on. So he was almost like working security for us, and yet we weren't paying him. But because I got to know him a little bit, the question of whether I was going to give him money or give him food, as I often did, became a different question for me. And in that is sort of the hope that I want to draw out today, this question of distance and closeness. Because I think that rich man who didn't even notice Lazarus until it was too late, until he himself was already dead, I think that is a lot more of what was going on, that it's not that he rejected this man, it's he just didn't even notice him. It never says in the Bible story that encounter that happens where where Lazarus says, please give me some food from your table at least, and the man says no. That's not in the story. We hear that there was a gate. Was the gate there? Yes, to keep the man out. But I think more importantly, the gate was there to keep the man at a distance. That's what we do, is we keep each other at a distance. We don't reject each other, we just fail to notice each other. The distance between wealth and poverty, the distance between me and someone else, me and you, is enormous in our culture. We're not bad people. We want to help, or we would. I even want to believe that rich man in the Bible story might have wanted to help if he'd actually noticed. When we notice each other, when we have compassion for each other, things change. And so the systems that depend on things staying the same depend on us not noticing each other. So they give us gates, and they give us they give us earbuds so we don't have to hear each other, and screens we can look at so we don't have to see each other. I'm a little nervous whenever we start talking too much about the demonic, about evil, but I do believe that there are forces in this world, a collective greed, a collective apathy that we generate as a society that keeps us apart. One theologian called it the paradox of moral man. He was writing a while ago, so he called it moral man and immoral society, that good people come together to make ungood, wicked systems. Or in the book of Ephesians, my favorite name for it is, he talks about the powers and the principalities, the forces in the sky that force us into these patterns of behavior, that create this expectation of distance, that we cannot know each other, that we cannot notice each other. So it says, the poor man died and was carried away by the angels to be with Abraham. The rich man also died and was buried. And in Hades, where he was being tormented, he looked up and he saw Abraham far away with Lazarus at his side. And he called out, "Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger, just the tip of his finger, in the water, and drip a little of that on my tongue so I can be quenched." And to me, that's a sign of the other kind, of the next kind of distance I want to talk about. Not just the distance between wealth and poverty, or the distance we put in between each other, but the distance between the way things are and the answers that could be. The rich man is tormented in the fire of Hades, but all he needs, he thinks, is a little drip of water on his tongue to bring him some relief. One of the tricks of those powers and principalities at their most clever is to make us feel like relief is so far off. They even misquote Jesus against us, right? They say, "Well, Jesus said, the poor you will always have with you," as though the answer, what that means is we shouldn't do anything at all. They might make us feel like it's so complicated, like fairness is so remote, like justice is so far away. And yet we've all seen examples of how little it takes to bring clean water to a village or to eradicate disease. We all see these television commercials that are poorly produced and late at night because they don't have enough money to do a great ad campaign, that say just pennies per dose, just a few dollars a day. And even in this country, it feels so expensive. How could we ever afford money to put new pipes in the ground in Flint, Michigan, so 100,000 people there don't have to drink poison every day? Have you ever been to Woodlawn? Have you ever been to Austin? How could we ever fix that level of social breakdown, of infrastructure breakdown? How could we afford to fix those things? We're so far from justice, it says. But you think about how little water it would take to soothe Lazarus' tongue. How little it would take to get good, fresh water to the people of Flint. How little water it would take to bring cool peace to parts of this city that have known far too much violence and injustice. Just a little water would have soothed that rich man. How close we are to a better society, a better world. So that's the second kind of distance I wanted to talk about. How far we are from each other, how close we are to something much better. And then it says this. The rich man begs Abraham, "Send word to my father's house, my brother's house, and let them know that they can change, that they still have time to change," sort of like Marley's ghost, right? It's too late for me, but they still have time to change. And Abraham replied, "If they don't listen to Moses and they don't listen to the prophets, they're not even going to be convinced if you were to rise from the dead and go tell them yourself." And I fear that here the final distance we have to wrestle with is the distance in our own hearts. That's why I wanted to start by telling you some of the stories of the struggles I feel. The great chasm that we have in our own hearts between our most faithful and compassionate selves and ourselves that get bought into this system of powers and principalities, this system of injustice. How much energy we put into keeping those things separate. How much psychic energy we put into running away from what is just. How much psychic energy we put walking down the street into avoiding eye contact. You all know that feeling, that stress that comes when there's someone you don't want to deal with in your path. It's not that there's any amount of money you could give to any one person in that moment that will make all the difference to them. That's not what I'm saying. And sometimes it's true, to give can be harmful instead of helpful. But of course, we'll never know until we ask. We never know until we engage, until we talk. every day I had an encounter with my friend outside the church at my last, outside the office at my last church. I thanked God for him, that he was helping me change my heart, whatever marginal amount of good I was doing for him. I know a friend who one year, for Lent, he liked Lenten disciplines, and so for Lent, he just got a whole bunch of $1 bills out of the bank, and he promised himself for 6 weeks, he's going to give a dollar bill to anyone who asks, for whatever reason, no good reason. Although it was a very good reason, because what he discovered was whatever good the dollars might have done to other people, they began to work a change in his life and to bring compassion and a thirst for justice into his heart, into his soul. A sermon like this, there's always an objection you can raise that says, you know, we thought you were going to talk about helping poor people, but here you are talking about helping yourself, about growing spiritually. And that's a fair objection. And there may be another sermon about that other topic. But given the fact that this world is governed by these powers and principalities to a very great degree, the changing of it depends on those of us who benefit changing our hearts too, to become our best selves, to become our most generous selves, to become our most compassionate selves, to become our most just selves. And in a way, that distance, that chasm, is the first one and maybe the most crucial one for us to cross. Amen.